join us. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 691, 692, and 693. These three are all kind of just housekeeping. One of them has an amendment, and they all have to do with irrigation districts and stuff. Gary, have you got any sheets for me back there, sign-up sheets? Let's do 1, 2, and 3. 691, 2, and 3. Real quick, bring them up. And I'll let Judith introduce them while you're doing that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. First of all, Senate Bill 691 allows the Board of Directors of Irrigation Districts during their organizational meeting to establish the date of the next annual organizational meeting. It allows the Board of Directors to appoint a manager of the Irrigation District, the manager of the Irrigation District, as Secretary of the Board. You also have at your seat at the dais the Dash 1 amendments, which removes the requirement that a director, in fact, be elected, because there are circumstances where those directors are appointed in order to serve as either president or secretary of the irrigation district. We have a no revenue and no fiscal impact on that particular measure. Senate Bill 692 changes the date of elections in irrigation districts when the regular election date falls on a legal holiday. It changes the date that the newly elected director in the irrigation district takes the oath of office and allows the Board of Directors during an organizational meeting to, again, establish the date of the next annual organizational meeting. Again, no fiscal, no revenue on Senate Bill 692. No amendments there. And finally, Senate Bill 693 changes persons authorized to sign checks or drafts for the irrigation districts by, in fact, requiring two signatures, no fiscal, no revenue impact statement received on this measure as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And signing up to be witnesses is Christina McNitt, right? And she's going to be about that fast getting done with this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt, and I'm with the Oregon Water Resources Congress this afternoon. My goal in drafting testimony was to keep it shorter than the actual bills. The Oregon Water Resources Congress is a voluntary statewide trade association of primarily local governments that are specifically organized to deliver irrigation water. Our members include irrigation districts, water associations, and water control districts, as well as individual farming operations and businesses that irrigate, affiliated companies, and other associations. Thank you for adding to your agenda a suite of three district governance bills. They're all sponsored by the Congress in the interest of helping our districts and their elected directors carry out their statutory duties under ORS Chapter 545, which regulates the operation of all irrigation districts in Oregon. First is Senate Bill 691. That bill would allow that the district board of directors can select its district manager as its secretary. The Dash 1 amendments delete the word elected on lines 10 and 11 to allow any director to serve as secretary, including those directors that have been appointed to fill vacancies. The second thing that Senate Bill 691 does is it allows districts to fix by resolution the date of its annual organizational meeting other than the first Tuesday in January, which is what's currently prescribed in law. Senate Bill 692 is kind of similar. Section 1, sub 1 and sub 2 of the bill mirrors language in 691 about allowing the district board to fix by resolution the date of its annual organizational meeting, and you'll see why later. Section 1, sub 3 of Senate Bill 692 states that a newly elected director takes his or her official oath at the annual organizational meeting in January, as opposed to existing statute in ORS 545-153, which directs the certificate of election to be given immediately following the election, which then triggers a 10-day period of time when the oath of office needs to be administered. This sets up a situation where a board could have two sets of sworn directors in office, the outgoing members and the incoming members, although the incoming new directors do not actually take office until the annual organizational meeting in January. And Section 1, Sub 4 provides the ability for districts to set their annual November election date on the first day after the first Tuesday in November if that Tuesday falls on a holiday. Currently, there are no provisions for moving an election, which has conflicted with Veterans Day in the past. And most of our district elections are actually conducted by mail, and conducting a mail on a federal holiday has been problematic. Finally, Senate Bill 693. This bill would delete current law that restricts district check signers to only the president and the secretary of the board, and instead would allow the board of directors to designate at least two authorized parties to sign the checks. I would be happy to answer any questions. I know they're simple bills, but they're important to us, and I would urge your support and passage of Senate Bill 691 with the dash one amendments, and Senate Bill 692 and 693 as written.
Thank you. Are there any questions? If there aren't any questions, I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 691, 692, and 693. And I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 691. And Senator George is going to help me out here.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. On Senate Bill 691, I'd like to move the dash one amendments dated March 8th.
Senator George asked for the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 6091. Is there any objection? So ordered. Senator George.
No, Senator, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move Senate Bill 691 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George recommends Senate Bill 691 be passed to the floor as amended. With a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered. And then we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 691 and open a hearing on 692.
Huh? Work session.
A work session, excuse me. We're opening a work session on 692. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to recommend that this committee move Senate Bill 692 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George recommends Senate Bill 692 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on Senate Bill 692? Any objection? If not, so ordered. Let's close the work session on 692 and open a work session on 693. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Following the similar amendment, a motion, and that is to move Senate Bill 693 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George moves Senate Bill 693 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion of Senate Bill 693? Is there any objection? So moved. We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 693, and I'm going to ask for volunteers to carry Senate Bill 691, 692, and 693. That would be Senator George, Senator Starr, and Senator Walker just walked in, wouldn't it?
That would be good.
691, 2, and 3. Okay. And these should take about three lines, unless you have Christina McNitt writing your speech for you, and then it'll be two lines. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Now, we're going to move. The folks from Toledo aren't here yet, right?
Correct.
And the tribal folks aren't here yet either. I saw those folks outside of Senator Walker's office a while ago. I'll tell you what, couldn't we move down the list? Is Das here yet for House Bills 2037?
Chair, can I possibly do commemorating the centennial of the city of Toledo?
You can do
while
it.
While they're waiting?
Sure,
mm-hmm.
let's
okay,
do it.
Okay, that's HCR 4A. Would you rather that I went down?
No, just stay where you are.
Or just stay where I am. And, Mr. Chair, because I really do think that the town of Toledo is one of the neatest places in my district, if you'll bear with me, I would like to read the resolution. Whereas in 1866, portions of the Central Oregon coast were opened for settlement by the federal government, And whereas John Graham and William McKee, seeking a more temperate climate and more fertile land, traveled with their families by horse and by boat to Oregon, settling at the confluence of Depot Slough and Yaquina River, each filing donation land claims on the acreage surrounding this site. And whereas the settlement's first post office was established on July the 14th, 1868, at the home of William McKee, and whereas the Grahams named the new settlement for their former home in Toledo, Ohio, and whereas abundant natural resources promised prosperity for those willing to work a land claim, helping the young community to grow and prosper, and whereas many small sawmills processed the easily accessible timber, while the many waterways provided easy transport, and whereas Lincoln County was formed in 1893, stretching from the western portions of Benton and Polk counties to the Pacific Ocean, and Toledo became the seat of the new county. And whereas World War I brought the U.S. Army Signal Corps to Toledo to build the biggest spruce sawmill in the world, and brought logging railroads into the woods, giving the small town the infrastructure to harvest stands of spruce and fir. And whereas timber has historically provided the economic base for Toledo and continues to do so today, as Georgia-Pacific Toledo pulp and paper operations employs one of the largest workforces in Lincoln County, and the Plum Creek Timber Company continues to manage the timberlands to ensure that timber will remain an abundant resource in Toledo's future. And whereas Oregon's rural communities provide cherished homes and valuable support to families, now, therefore, be it resolved by the Legislative Assembly of the State of Oregon that we, the members of the 73rd Legislative Assembly, commemorate the 100th anniversary of the City of Toledo, celebrated on February the 18th, 2005, and convey our warmest regards to its residents.
Thank you. Any discussion of this House concurrent resolution?
It's a very fine resolution, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, it is. Very well written, actually.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
As the former senator representing Toledo, it is a fine place indeed, except for the airport.
Except for what?
The airport.
Well, the airport.
Which the runway is way too short.
Oh, okay. I was not aware of that.
We're going to fix that someday, by the way.
Okay. Any other relevant comments? If not, I'd like to close the hearing on HCR 4A and open a work session. Senator Berger, would you like
yes,
to...
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move House Concurrent Resolution 4 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Berger moves House Concurrent Resolution 4 to the floor with a due pass resolution. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered, and we'll let Senator Berger carry that one.
Thank you.
Okay. Pat Allen is here on House Bill 2087, 2095, 2204, and 2206. I'm a little bit thrown off because somebody from DAS briefed me on these the other day, and that person isn't here today. But what I'm going to do is open a hearing on all four, and I'm going to let Judith explain them briefly, and then we'll get to you, okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chair members. House Bill 2087 adds the Oregon Department of Transportation to the list of agencies that can enter into leases of real property for more than 5 years without the approval of the Department of Administrative Services. It provides for streamlining the process used for managing surplus and excess real property assets. There's a no revenue and no fiscal impact statement received on House Bill 2087. On House Bill 2095, That measure eliminates the requirement for applicants to have documents notarized in cases where proof of identity is not needed. It omits the necessity of a sworn statement and facilitates electronic commerce. It removes sworn statement requirements for licensing or reporting requirements of x-ray equipment, credit service organizations, money transmitters, consumer finance organizations, pawnbrokers, tax consultants and preparers, occupational therapists, physical therapists, respiratory therapists, dietitians, and investigators. It preserves the authority of regulators to revoke the license of an individual or organization found to have submitted false information on those documents that they now do not have to provide sworn statements on. And it retains the misdemeanor penalty for providing false information. It provides for technical continuity and statutory language. We have received a no fiscal and no revenue impact statement on House Bill 2095. House Bill 2204 allows state agencies to notify parties interested in rulemaking via electronic mail. It requires interested parties desiring notification to provide a mailing address or an electronic mailing address, an email address to the agency to receive those notifications. I will point out, we just passed out the fiscal impact statement on 2204, which basically says that there is some, if you look at the last paragraph under the comments, there is some expenditure reductions that may be anticipated, except cannot be quantified. That is the cost saved in having to mail out notices, saving stamp and paper and that sort of cost, now that they can opt to provide those documents through email. And finally, Mr. Chair, House Bill 2206 amends current law regarding how administrative rule changes are formatted. It allows copies of an amended rule to indicate changes by striking through the material to be deleted and underlining new material, or by an other method that clearly shows new and deleted material, so everyone's clear on those changes. We have received a no fiscal and no revenue impact on House Bill 2206. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Allen, welcome to committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I guess you're going to hold forth on all four of these, kind of in order, and then we have a couple questions for you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Allen. I manage the Office of Regulatory Streamlining, which is at the Department of Consumer and Business Services. We're charged by the governor with helping state agencies find ways to make their business regulations cheaper, faster, simpler, easier to comply with while maintaining standards for Oregonians. These are four bills of the 34-bill legislative package agencies submitted this session to find ways to streamline business regulations. In keeping with the notion of streamlining, I think my testimony won't take on all four bills as long as the bill summary did. We'll be able to get
You're
through these.
Streamlining your testimony.
Streamlining as
right.
much as I can. Oh. These bills come to you from the House, I think, with a cumulative vote of about 210 for and four against. So hopefully these are reasonably non-controversial. I'll just add a couple of points to the summary on each of these bills. You do have written testimony, very brief written comments from the agencies involved in front of you. They're here available to answer questions. If you would like. House Bill 2087 deals with the Department of Transportation and leases on property. These are for properties that for whatever reason aren't eligible to actually be disposed of by the agency but are of value in lease transactions. There is an internal department process on leases that's followed for authorizing leases. This removes a second approval process that goes through the Department of Administrative Services. Department of Administrative Services is aware of the bill and has no objections to it. House Bill 2095 has to do with sworn statements. About a dozen agencies or a dozen kinds of licenses, as you heard in the summary, require sworn statements. In Oregon, that means the documents have to be notarized, and that means that they are then ineligible for any kind of future consideration of electronic reporting or renewal or licensing or those kinds of things. And there's not really a rhyme or reason to why those 12 and not any of the other 1,100 or so licenses that the state issues that require notarizations. And so this removes that notarization requirement. As you heard, licensing agencies can still revoke a license for having submitted false information and so forth.
I'm going to stop you there because I know that Senator Verger has some concerns about sworn oaths and let her ask any questions that she has, okay?
Yes. I don't know if I have a question particularly, but what I don't quite understand is if many other licenses are done in the manner in which you're trying to do these, I would question that, because this is a time of identity theft, knowing who people are and exactly what their life. We should be making stricter laws, not making more lenient laws. I know that this is convenient for agencies to have everybody do everything by electronic media, but I have to tell you, I will be a no on your bill, and I did prepare you for that before today. Would you like to respond to my concerns? Because I think that they are very legitimate.
Certainly, Senator. Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, I agree that you've raised some legitimate issues. I guess I would observe a couple of things. One is that although moving to electronic transactions certainly can help agencies, what we're really trying to do is to find ways that complying with regulations can be easier for the businesses, or in this case often the professionals that have to comply. And so finding ways that they can submit required documentation on their time and schedule or at their location, rather than coming to Salem or mailing documents or going through the expense, in this case, of notarization, in looking at these 12 licenses, seems an appropriate trade-off in terms of maybe a perceived loss of safety and security. These licenses, as I say, are sort of an isolated 12 that don't. There's not a driving reason that these 12 were selected for this kind of treatment. We still retain the ability to revoke a license. We retain the ability to prosecute someone for unsworn falsification. What's really lost in this simply is the ability to pursue someone for a felony charge of perjury. And in my investigating this issue with these agencies, couldn't find examples of that step having actually been taken. So,
follow up, Mr.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify. So you're saying nobody's ever actually followed through on the perjury charge?
Mr. Chair, I don't want to say nobody's ever. I would say I've not been able to find an example of that having been done.
Okay. Senator Berger, go ahead.
Yes, let me just paint a picture for you. I'm a pawn broker. There's a new casino in Florence, so I move in because that's a good place for me to be. You catch me doing things that are wrong, and you say, well, you're going to take my license away from me, but it's a misdemeanor on my record. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, right. The criminal issue would be a misdemeanor. I think the thinking that's gone on in this is that what's really going to be of value to you as a pawnbroker is your ability to engage in that business, which you would lose.
That's all, Mr.
Okay. Thank you. Continue. I'll let you...
Moving then on to 2204, and unless there are further questions on time.
Are there any other questions on 2095?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Allen, we talked about my license. Did you inquire?
I have not been able to get an answer to the question having to do with court reporters yet.
Okay. I'm just, they're waiving all this notarization stuff. I thought I'd inquire about the license I have to have.
And we'll checking into that. Okay. And as soon as we're able to get that answer, I will get that to you.
Move on to 2204.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2204 clarifies that agencies are allowed to make notice of rulemaking by email. It does not remove the requirement that notices, or it does not remove the option of receiving a paper notification. Simply adds email as a clear option. And then finally, 2206. I think simplifies and allows some flexibility on the form by which agencies make notice of rulemaking. Right now, they're required to use a method very similar to what you used in legislative measures, and that's the only accepted method of highlighting changes by bracketing remove text and bolding new text. This would allow more typical standard of strike-throughs and underlines, and then basically allows permissive language that you can do it other ways that make sense as long as it's clear to the reader what the changed language is. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions on any four of the House Bills 2087-95, 2204, and 2206? Any questions at all? other than those that have already been asked. If not, we'll ask you to step back, and I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2087, 2095, 2204, and 2206. And just so I can get in a rhythm of things, I'm going to open a work session first on House Bill 2095. That's the one that Senator Verger had some questions about that has to do with sworn oaths and notarization and so on. Is there any discussion of that bill? If not, I'm going to ask Gary if he will call the roll. Yes.
Can I make the motion?
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm trying to hurry today.
We're on 2095.
Yes. Yeah, we're on 2095.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2095 to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 2095 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Gary, would you call the roll?
Discussion. I had asked about court reporter licenses, and I haven't heard back. I'm not going to hold the bill up for that. It's just, it seems silly that we have to get a notarization to say that we filled out paperwork. But yeah, I'd have to hold the bill up, and then I'd have to go to the House, and it's just not worth it, and it only impacts my profession, so I will.
We're gonna make sure that you get an answer, right? Either that or she might go over and throw a hand grenade at your office or something. Who knows? Okay. Any other discussion?
Mm-mm.
All right. I had asked if we could call the roll on House Bill 2095. Okay.
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Verger?
No.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Aye. House Bill 2095 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'll carry that one. Now let's close the hearing on 2095 and open a hearing on open a work session on 2087.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
move
Senator.
House Bill 2087 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. We're moving. We have a motion to move House Bill 2087 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? If not, so ordered. Who wants to carry this one, 2087? This is an exciting bill. Senator Starr.
Sure.
Okay. We've closed the work session on 2087. We'll open a work session on 2204.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Starr.
House Bill 2204 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves House Bill 2204 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If there's not any objection, so ordered. And let's see, Senator George, you only have one bill so far today to carry. You can get 2204.
Sure.
Judith or somebody's going to be busy writing speeches. We'll close the hearing on 2204 and open a hearing on 2206.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move House Bill 2206 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves House Bill 2206 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? 2206. Yes, Senator Verger.
Mr. Chair, I think that House Bill 2206 is unnecessary. The changes that were in it, I will be a no.
It's not necessary, huh?
Right.
Okay. Somebody's going to have to explain to us why they thought it was necessary when we didn't. Do you want some response to that under discussion?
No.
Why do you? Well, I know. I guess I'm kind of interested. Let's get.
Well, it says if you look at what they eliminate in brackets, and they say you don't have to do boldface as long as you let people know what the changes are. I guess I just, maybe I don't like change, but, you know, the way that I read it right now, I have no problem in brackets and boldface and in being able to know exactly what the changes are. And I think that people could take this and say, well, we won't boldface it, so then I don't know what their new little technique is of underlining. And so I like the way we do it now, and I think it's unnecessary. So.
Okay, Senator Starr.
I can't disagree with Senator Verger, but to a point, I think that what this bill is getting at is the widespread use of Microsoft Word as the word processing tool of choice, I guess, for most state agencies. I know it is in the private sector. And whenever you edit a document in Microsoft Word, it's strike through and underline is the way that it works. That's the way that the computer program sets it up. And so I think that's the underlying reason for this bill.
And
having the other language by any other method that clearly shows all new or deleted material, you know, opens it up so they can maintain the current program as we're used to here. But my gut is that this is Microsoft Word targeted, and
yes.
I think that's the
end. In fact, whoever came and explained it to us said this is a Microsoft Word adaptation. Is there any comments that you want to make about that? Come on up. Identify yourself and tell us why we have to do this. We should have mentioned Microsoft Word, I think, right up front. Go ahead.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, Philip Schradl, special counsel to the Attorney General. Department of Justice sponsored this bill along with the Office of Regulatory Streamlining, and this recent discussion is exactly that. The purpose behind the bill is kind of twofold. One, with the ready access of the current computer programs, that is exactly how it makes it most efficient and effective. And people who aren't as familiar with the legislative process, in fact, are used to seeing the language actually formulated that way with strike through and underlining. We've conferred with legislative counsel, and one of the pieces of communication that needs to go on when you're engaging in rulemaking is providing copies of rules to legislative counsel. Dave Hendricks is absolutely comfortable with this proposal and thinks that there actually should be a bit of cost savings out there for agencies when they're doing this to use the computer programs that Senator Starr was talking about. And the hope also is that there would be less opportunity for mistakes to be made in the process because people out there are used to using the computer programs to do the strike through and underlining. And if they need to go to what you're used to, Senator Verger, about the bolding and you know the brackets and italicized material, that there's just it's a less readable format for those who aren't used to the legislative process, and more likely that there might be mistakes made along the way. It's simply a streamlining hope, and hope would carry with it some cost savings, too.
We can blame it on Microsoft, and it's kind of part of the McDonaldization of the world, you know, in my humble opinion. Senator Verger.
Let me tell you what really started me thinking about this. We just heard a bill in Ways and Means where if you electronically applied for something, that you would pay a less fee. Now, to me, that's very offensive. In other words, if you have a computer and you know how to use it, you go to the head of the line. And if that's the road we're on here, which even though this might be interagency and within the government loop, but if we're going to say that the only people that can now start communicating with us and then add to that they get some price break by doing so, I am never going to go down that road because I don't think that that's what we're here for. I'm sent here to look out for a lot of people that don't have computers.
Chair Shields, Senator Verger, yes, I would agree with that, and I don't think that this proposal would go down that road because this is really for agencies when they're engaged in the rulemaking process, and it's simply trying to make it more effective and efficient for them. It doesn't have any effect on outside entities that might want to submit something to the agency in the rulemaking process or require anybody to use a computer program that doesn't have access to them now. This is solely internally to the agency.
Actually could streamline things for the agencies themselves, and because it makes things faster, could save some money is what you're saying.
Chair Shields, yes, that's true. And it would make it, I think, more readable for agency folks as well as we hope for the public.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I will be agreeable to no objection to get it to the floor with no promise of how I vote on the floor.
Okay. I guess we are in the middle of the work session. Senator Starr had already moved 2206. We were under discussion. Is there any further discussion on this bill? Is there any objection to sending House Bill 2206 to the floor with a due pass recommendation? Hearing none, so ordered. And we will close our work session on House Bill 2206. And I'll ask Senator Walker if she'll be the carrier on that one. Is that okay?
Yes, Ms. Chair. I wrote myself in knowing you would do that. Thank you.
You're a very clever lady.
Mr. Chair.
Now we're going to... Oh, yes.
We have Senator Walker and Senator Starr here right now, and if it would be appropriate, I'd like to move to suspend the rules unanimously to consent to the fact that these two would be able to vote on Senate Bill 691 and 692.
And three, right?
No,
they were here for three. Okay. How do I do that? Senator George has moved that we suspend the rules and allow Senator Walker and Senator Starr to vote on Senate Bill 691 and 692.
Any objections?
Can I just so order this, or do they need to be called?
And then call, and then...
And so ordered on... Senate Bill 691, Gary, would you call their names?
Senator Starr.
Votes aye.
Senator Walker.
Aye.
And on On Senate Bill 692, Gary, would you read their names?
Senator Starr.
Votes aye.
And Senator Walker.
Aye.
Thank you. Now, what I want to do is open a hearing on both Senate Joint Memorial 6 and Senate Joint Resolution 12. Judith, would you bring us up to speed, and then we'll invite Senator Farioli up with his folks, okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senate Joint Memorial 6 urges Congress to fund a study of the National 1855 Treaty Trail so that the National Park Service may designate the trail as a National Historic Trail for the Sesquicentennial. That was pretty good. Of 1855 treaties, that's the first time I've read that term out loud. Mr. Chair, anyway, there's no fiscal, no revenue on the memorial. Senate Joint Resolution 12 directs state agencies and urges local governments to honor and support the promises made in the 1855 treaty with the tribes of Middle Oregon. Again, no fiscal, no revenue on the resolution. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Farioli, would you come forward and bring others with you as you wish? If you need another chair for Louis Pitt, why grab a fourth chair? Or do the chairs out there not work or move?
Mr. Chairman, State Senator Ted Farioli, I think it's appropriate that we hear first from Chief Heath.
Okay. Chief, we're glad to have you here this afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Shields and members of the General Government Committee. In this one issue, we do say, my name is Dallas Heath, and I'm the chief from the Warm Springs Tribe. And we're celebrating 150 years of a treaty in Warm Springs. There's a paper written up, and I want to thank Farioli and Kate Brown, Louis Pitt, Michael Mason for writing it up. I'll go from what I was taught from my heart, that the Creator put us on this earth, and there's five bands from the Warm Springs people: John Day Band, Bucksbush people, Upper Deschutes Band, Lower Deschutes Band, Teich Band, and five different bands, and there were three different from the Wasco Band, and I don't know them bands, but Wasco. But the Warm Springs, where I'm originally from the Teich Band, and part Bucksbush from the John Day Band, and we roamed the territory for centuries. When the Creator made the Indian, he Chimashwaimi Naknuichnati Cham. I'll give you this land. The land is here. You're to watch it, watch over, take care of the water, take care of it. The water takes care of everything. Everything is laid out. And you're only on this earth for a short time, but we always maintain that, and we knew eventually there's going to be people coming to this land. We knew about that long before they were coming, and we knew about the people that was going to be coming to our land, so we continues to go about our way till the federal government start to get us off of the John Day territory and upper Deschutes and lower Deschutes and move us, and they moved us up to the original the Warm Springs Confederate Tribes area. That's 68,000 acres in Middle Oregon, and our people always maintained. We have a lot of people that passed long before we did that are buried out there, and they always went out and take care of them. But after they moved us to the reservation, we only maintained the fishing at customary places and hunting. But we don't use a lot of them, but we celebrate there every year on June 25th. The treaty that was made with the United States government. We celebrate it, and I'm inviting you all to come to celebrate with us. That way we can learn more about each other, and we sure like to share everything that we have with you. Anybody and everybody that wants to learn about what we are about, we have a treaty, and that treaty was with the United States, and we want to welcome you and hope that you can all make it there. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Ferrioli, do you want to continue? Or
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just touch on Senate Joint Memorial 6, and then I'll defer to the Chief again on Senate Joint Resolution 12. They're very different in scope. Senate Joint Memorial 6 urges Congress to fund a study of the National 1855 Treaty Trail so that the National Park Service could designate the trail as a National Historic Trail for the sesquicentennial of the 1855 treaties. In the perspective of history, there was strong belief that the interior tribes of the Great Basin, being well settled in that region for over 10,000 years, needed to be approached and a negotiation entered into with those tribes for the ceding of their traditional ancestral lands, and in return the offering of a treaty. And the treaty would recognize the rights and responsibilities of both the Native American peoples and the tribes that inhabited the vast interior. The undertaking was at the request and order of Governor Isaac Stevens, who was in the Washington Territory, and Joel Palmer, who was the Superintendent of Indian Affairs for the Oregon Territory. And they proceeded to negotiate an astonishing series of treaties, 11 in total, that involved the Warm Springs, the Walla Walla, the Umatilla, and the Nez Perce tribes. And they proceeded through Washington and Oregon as far as into the interior of Idaho and Montana. And the result of this negotiation and this journey that was made resulted in a lasting peace between many peoples and became the basis for the relationships that we today enjoy between Oregonians and the Native American peoples of the Umatilla, the Warm Springs, the Nez Perce, and other tribes in the other 11 tribes in the area. The interesting thing about this resolution is that it looks at the sesquicentennial of Lewis and Clark from the other perspective. while the journey of discovery and the core of discovery was coming from St. Joseph, Missouri, out to the Pacific Ocean, or what would become the basis for the Oregon Trail, there were already people living in the neighborhood. And they were essentially looking at the journey that was made, this epic journey that was made to negotiate these treaties, as another kind of a journey of discovery. And it mapped the rights and responsibilities of peoples and became the basis for the relationships that we have today. What this memorial does is asks that Congress study the treaty trail, which is particularly evident in Oregon, traceable in the state of Oregon. And what that would allow to happen is that a new and maybe a deeper understanding of the way we came to the agreements that we have with the tribes, and how that journey of discovery started, and the resulting 11 treaties came into being. And the nice thing about this is that it does coincide with the sesquicentennial celebration of the Lewis and Clark Trail.
That'd be the journey of discovery. The Lewis and Clark and Susquehanna.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Chairman. I sit corrected.
Okay.
So I guess for me, this adds such a depth of perspective to the history of the region and of the peoples involved that it's certainly worth doing to educate our kids about what it is to see this negotiation successfully concluded in 1855 that created the treaties that are today the basis for many of our partnerships with the tribal nations. So that is the sum total of Senate Joint Memorial 6.
I want to thank you for the history of this that I certainly didn't know. I imagine you've had more of a chance to learn it living out in Central Oregon. Can you answer a little question for me, or maybe Louis can, or Michael? The dimension of this trail, I mean, we're talking about studying the trail so that the Park Service may designate the trail as a National Historic Trail. Can you describe it a little bit? I mean, I'm at a loss. Or Michael, maybe it's up to you.
You can move.
I move them all the
time. Okay, I'll move them then, if I have the chair's permission. Chair Shields and members of the General Government Committee, I'm going to diverge for just a moment. As a child, I lived for a while in Cosmopolis, Washington, and there is a mural of the first treaty council on the wayside of the wastewater treatment plant.
Wow.
Which is an interesting location, but I remember seeing this and asking about it and learning that this was the first location for this set of treaties. So they went, Stevens originally, Governor Stevens, started in Cosmopolis, Washington, Grays Harbor, and worked his way back over to Olympia and then south, negotiated treaties in Olympia, then came down to Fort Vancouver, went upriver to Walla Walla, came back to the Dalles, then proceeded up into Idaho and over to what's now Missoula to negotiate, and then east of there to Judith River, Montana. And this was all done in 11 months, which is the reference Senator Farrelly had to the astounding nature of this journey, that so much could be accomplished. No one died in the process, which is even more astonishing when you think about it. But that gives you some sense. I mean, to cover all of that territory and some of it backtracking. So as far as knowing where the trail is, I should mention, too, what are we talking about in terms of asking the Congress for study money? About $50,000 is all it's going to cost, because the treaty, the trail is pretty well known, and much of it is along the Columbia and Snake Rivers. So it's not a lot of research to figure out where they what they traversed.
But it's a matter of educating our public about our own history.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Are there other questions that any of you have? I find this very fascinating, but I don't want to. We've been moving at light speed this afternoon.
I wanted to make a comment, because it just struck me in your testimony that so much credit was given to the fact that he listened. And undoubtedly that meant he didn't just listen with his ears. He really heard what people were saying to him. And that was the credit that they gave. And then he kept his word. So to me, those were profound things that have influenced my life today in Oregon because of relationships. So we might have a real lesson to learn in that.
Thank you. Other questions? Let's move on. We've done, that takes care of six. Let's move on to 12. We're still in the hearings process.
Mr. Chair, before you do that, I just want to state that the testimony of Mr. Pitt indicates that Joel Palmer, his written testimony indicates that Joel Palmer, one of our ancestors, was Speaker of the House of Representatives. And he's exactly right. And the Joel Palmer House is a restaurant out in Dayton.
Very good restaurant.
It's a very good restaurant, absolutely. And it used to be Mr. Palmer's home. And I went on the web one night to research information about Mr. Palmer, and he had a wonderful history, and it was helping negotiate these treaties. And so thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. Senator Farioli, I'm deferring to you. How do you want to proceed now?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I would again defer to Chief Delvis Heath if he wishes to address Senate Joint Resolution 12 and speak about the Treaty of 1855.
Oh, thank you, Chief.
It sounds like Mr. Pitt's on point on this one.
Okay. Louis, welcome.
Yes. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Pitt, Jr., Director of Government Affairs and Planning with the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. And this is one of those situations where we really have, I think, a view of the authorities that I have to work with. I'm kind of a corporate official, works for a corporate entity, it's a tribe, but the chief is an inherent sovereign individual that's been, his family's been a line of leadership for our tribes, for the Warm Springs tribe for thousands of years. Senate Joint Resolution 12 directs state agencies and urges local governments to honor and support promises made in the 1855 treaty with the Middle Oregon tribes. Two of the tribes, of the three, we have a confederacy now with the Paiutes, is the Warm Springs, as he's the chief of, and I'm recognized as my mom was a Warm Springer too, but more so as a Wasco. So we had different areas, different authorities when we negotiated the treaty with the United States. And I always remind people to call the Louisiana Purchase the biggest real estate transaction, you know, ever. It wasn't a real estate transaction. It was only two large governments talking to each other and trying to get preemptive authority to then do the real estate with the tribes that were the owners of the lands. So we are truly owners of those lands and resources. And 11 treaties in 11 months, 11 totally different people, some similar, but again, different in authorities and places, different in religions. Equal, I think, the United States at arm's length is the way the court system says. And I think, again, the main thing that we do today, that the chief, we start our council with either songs from the ancient songs from the Paiutes or the Wascos or the Warm Springs, and as continually, and then the way he lives his life too reminds us of the important follow through that we need to have with not only the treaty but the taking care of the lands. Joel Palmer, I'm on a history quest again, trying to figure out just exactly who this very complex individual was. A unique individual is incredibly big-hearted when it came to trying to be fair in a very tough situation, especially on this side of the Cascades. We knew how to take care of ourselves on our side, and so he knew, because there was a number of wars going on at the same time, that he needed to make sure where we were. And so treaty was one way of not so much it wasn't a peace treaty, it was a treaty to negotiate the clear title to the lands, and in return for we get to maintain our way of life and keep our way of life, we have access to resources off reservation. That's real key. A lot of folks just think about us as lands on reservation. No, the treaty says off reservation. Please remember that. That's key. The treaty continues even today. In the testimony, it's amazing, we have those 11 treaties that were negotiated in 1855, and And again, this was clearing titles to lands to make way for states, counties, private ownership. And so I'm on the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial Committee, appointed by the governor to keep an eye on things. And I went to tribal council. Council says, you're not going to celebrate Lewis and Clark. We will celebrate 150 years of the treaty, and we will try to maximize some opportunities with Lewis and Clark. But Louis, you behave. So we've been doing our best to try to, you know, with the influx of people that they're just amazing how curious they are about these explorers coming in here. And so we're going to, again, take that as an opportunity to let the world know more about who we are. So that's what I think both of these memorials represent, is that we're here, we're in front of you now talking. We're not talking with the United States, we're talking to you as a representative of the states to ask for some help on getting the word out about who we are. And we're very proud of who we are. The chief is my golf partner. I get accused of ruining a good chief, but he's a good friend, and he's taught me a lot over the years about just how to live your life, not just talk about it, not to walk the talk, too. So, again, I urge you for support for these both of these memorials. They're both really going to go a long ways to help us as tribal nations and citizens. And hopefully, I think that you've got a number of states, agencies that have really been, I think, gone the extra mile to help us out, from ODOT to Parks and Recreation. It's just been wonderful. Parks and Recreation on the Columbia River has been great coordinating efforts, and I just really appreciate that. Bobby Connor, to give credit where credit is due, on the trail bill, she's from Umatilla. Bobby, I think, had her own version, and most of their trail with Stevens is in Washington, and so she, we're complementing that with kind of our bill with Oregon. And then we're hoping that other tribes throughout the trail, like Idaho and Montana, and et cetera, as they go in Missouri, I guess, go east, is that they would do the same. But again, we don't tell other tribes what to do. And so with the 50-plus tribes that that are on the trail, is that, you know, we just put ideas out, and they don't have to take them, as is their sovereignty. So we're going to try to pick these up and get council. Council says go ahead and put things on the table and see how they work. So that's what we're doing.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel of witnesses?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to add to the testimony. If I
might. Okay, go ahead.
I think it's important and fitting that we celebrate the Treaty of 1855. I've become a student of the treaty and its implications, and I think there are a few things that we need to understand. The Treaty of 1855 has not always been affirmed by our government. There have been various attempts early in our history to repudiate this treaty. And the tribes have vigorously defended their rights and, in fact, been able to assert their rights legally on the basis of what is the written word in the 1855 treaty. We inherit this document from our ancestors, and I'm almost certain when I say that many of our members don't understand its full implication. Or even have sort of gotten their minds around the issue of sovereignty and government-to-government relations. To help do that, the legislature has within it an organization that is not a member or not a part of the executive branch, nor part of the judicial branch, but it is, in fact, part of the legislative branch, and that's the Legislative Commission on Indian Affairs. That is our entity to try to help us understand nation-to-nationhood and governments-to-government relations. Most members of the legislature serve their career without really ever interfacing with this entity that's created as a legislative tool. The fact of the 1855 treaty and the whole series of treaties that were written is that there are really no other documents like this in the history of this country. And in the relationships that we have with tribes. It's also true that there are no other tribes that I know of, and perhaps I could get corrected here in a hurry, that have been continuously the stewards of their land since time immemorial. And that is, in fact, the reality of the Warm Springs Reservation. It is a homeland that has come intact through the generations to the current tribal members of the Warm Springs Confederation. That is not true, I think, of any other interior homeland that Native Americans enjoy in this country. I find it interesting that the tribal council decided they were not going to celebrate the arrival of Lewis and Clark. I mean, after all, there goes the neighborhood. They were perfectly happy here and had 10,000-year history before they were discovered. And I know how resentful I am when Oregon gets discovered by Californians. I can't imagine what it would be like to be discovered by the Corps of Discovery. I'm personally interested in this issue because the niche of the ceded land base is District 30. That includes the current locations of the city of Bend and Cascade Locks and Hood River and John Day and Madras and Prineville and the Dalles. It includes the Hood River, Wasco, Sherman, Gillum, Jefferson, Crook, Wheeler, and Deschutes County and portions of Clackamas, Marion, Morrow, and Grant. And I realize where Secretary Bradbury found the lines to call it a community of interest when he gave me District 30. It almost exactly matches these areas. District 30 is 37,000 square miles. I think the ceded lands of, 34,000 square miles. I don't want to make it bigger than it is. The ceded lands are larger in scope. And the treaty reserves forever the tribal rights to fish at usual and accustomed stations and to graze stock and to hunt and gather and to fish on those lands that were ceded. As long as they are unoccupied lands. And that, that by implication, is a vast territory in the interior of the state of Oregon on which the tribes, tribal members have the usual and customary rights of hunting, gathering, and fishing, and grazing. And they exercise those rights. So I think it's incumbent on us to understand the full implications of the Treaty of 1855, the anniversary of which falls on June 25th, which happens to coincide with the bicentennial of the Lewis and Clark celebration. And I guess, Mr. Chairman, that in sum total, the gist of Senate Joint Resolution 12 is that a deal's a deal, and that it would behoove us to reaffirm this deal and to try to help legislators understand the full implications. And that is what Senate Joint Resolution 12 would account.
Well, thank you. This has been a good little bit of a history lesson for all of us. Are there questions that any of you have? I would like to ask you all to step back for a minute. We have a couple other people on our witness list. Kelsey Wilson from the Confederated Tribe of the Umatilla has signed up to testify. And also, Hans Bernard is here to testify for Senator Brown's office on these two bills. So I'd like to ask both of them to hold forth for a few minutes, and then we're going to pick up the pace and get back to the speed that we were moving earlier. Okay? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I'll be very brief. Members of the committee, my name is Kelsey Wilson, and I represent the Confederated Tribe of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. Unfortunately, no one from Umatilla could come out today and ask for your support on Senate Joint Memorial 6. I am here to put on the record that the Confederated Tribe of the Umatilla Indian Reservation is in total support of this joint memorial, and we urge the committee to approve it and move it forward. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of this joint memorial.
Thank you. Hans?
Chair Shields, members of the Committee on General Government, thank you for the opportunity to be here today and testify on behalf of Senator Brown in support of these two important measures. Senate Joint Resolution 12 is an important step toward honoring and supporting the promises made by two governments in 1855. By passing this resolution, we will remember, commemorate, and work to uphold this historic agreement. The treaty with the tribes of Middle Oregon was a historic achievement between two nations. Joel Palmer, Superintendent of Indian Affairs for the Oregon Territory, and leaders from the Wasco and Warm Springs tribes negotiated this treaty that respects the sovereignty of both nations. I would also encourage you to support Senate Joint Memorial 6. The memorial will urge Congress to fund the study of the 1855 Treaty Trail so that the National Park Service will have the ability to designate the trail as a historic part of our history. These two measures are paired perfectly for your consideration. I encourage you to support SJR 12 and know that it will help Oregon to uphold its agreement made in 1855. I also urge you to pass Senate Joint Memorial 6 and urge Congress to fund the study of the Treaty Trail. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I'm happy to respond to any questions that you may have.
Are there any questions? I want to thank you both for your testimony this afternoon. If there are no questions and no further discussion, I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Joint Memorial 6 and Senate Joint Resolution 12. And I'm going to open a work session on Senate Joint Memorial 6.
Chair.
Yes.
Move Senate Joint Memorial 6 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator,
to adopt, I think.
Senator Starr, how's the wording?
Moves to
adopt Senate Joint Memorial 6. Is that right?
That's
there on the Senate floor. Moves it to the floor with a do adopt resolution.
That's right.
Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered. We'll close the hearing on Senate Joint Memorial 6 and open a hearing on Senate Joint Resolution, open a work session on Senate Joint Resolution 12. Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Joint Resolution 12 to the Senate floor with a, I think, do pass?
Be adopted.
Recommendations.
Senator Starr moves Senate Joint Resolution 12 to the Senate floor with a to be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to make two comments. I wonder if we could get that much business done. 11 treaties. These were major treaties.
Yeah, they were.
In a short period of time. Also, I wish that there was some way that we could raise the visibility of these kinds of memorials that we send to Congress. I worry that they get them and read them and toss it aside, and even though it goes to each congressman. So I'd ask members of the tribe to help me think of some way that we can better get the attention of our Congress when we sincerely want to send things their way.
I've been feeling that way for about 12 years around here, but especially with something like this, it bothers me.
Yes, it needs to rise to a higher priority for them and not be just another piece of paper that's coming across their desk.
Any other discussion? Well, let's see. We were at the recommendation.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd want to address that comment.
Go ahead.
I know that there's at least two members of the legislative body, one on the House side and one on the Senate side, that are going to attend the NCSL meeting in April in Washington, D.C. If it were possible that these two measures pass through both chambers prior to that time, I know that I, for me, speaking for me personally, I'd be more than happy to hand carry these.
So you're going to NCSL?
Yes.
And who else?
I believe that Representative Jeff Krupp is going to attend as well. He's the vice chair of an NCSL committee, and we talked about that. So.
Well, since you're on this committee, it would be very appropriate for you to hand carry this.
I would be more than happy to do that.
Yeah, that could help raise the profile.
We just got to get it through the process. I think it's the second week of April that those meetings are going to take place. So I'd work with the tribes as well to...
Okay, great. That's wonderful. The recommendation has already been made. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection to this resolution? If not, so ordered. And I want to close the hearing on Senate Joint Resolution 12 and move to our final bill of the afternoon. We've moved with light speed up to now. This is House Bill 2155.
And who's carrying SGM 6 and 12?
Senator Kate Brown and Senator Ferrioli are going to be carrying these two. Hans was in here and did some testimony for you. Are you wanting to have us reopen a hearing for you? Okay. You get to carry them on the floor. You and Ted can fight over them up there. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay.
My apologies.
That's okay. I'm asking Judith if she'll hold forth on House Bill 2155 for a moment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House Bill 2155 grants the governor greater flexibility to assist local jurisdictions. It does, in fact, make firefighting forces and equipment available in response to a heightened danger of fire or during a significant reduction in available firefighting resources. It gives fire departments and districts the authority and liability coverage afforded by the Conflagration Act to provide good neighbor assistance outside the usual mutual aid agreements. The measure has no fiscal and no revenue impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Judith. And with that, I'm going to ask Nancy Orr from the Office of the State Fire Marshal and Bob Garrison from the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association if they'll come forward. And we promise not to grant you as much time as the last two bills. The faster you move, the faster this will get moved out of committee. Okay?
Chair Shields, members of the committee, I'm Nancy Orr, State Fire Marshal. House Bill 2155 was introduced by the governor at the request of the Oregon Fire Service and the State Fire Marshal. It's, as you heard, designed to give the authority and liability coverage of the Conflagration Act for fire departments to provide what is called good neighbor service to fire districts outside their normal mutual aid agreements. Excuse me, Mr. Garrison, our recently retired fire marshal, is here to give you just a few details about what that means exactly out in the field.
Okay. Thank you. Chair Shields, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Robert Garrison, former state fire marshal. In November of 2002, three Coos Bay firefighters were killed fighting a commercial structure fire. That, of course, deeply shocked the community and brought the fire department to its knees. And that community was literally without fire protection. Their immediate neighbors, with whom they had mutual aid agreements, stepped in very quickly to cover the stations. But the nature of that grieving process was somewhat protracted, and it went beyond the ability of local neighboring fire departments to provide services to that community. We were called on through the State Fire Marshal's office to organize assistance from outside the area, which we did. We were actually inundated with offers from fire chiefs and fire departments all around the state. They wanted to send people, they wanted to send apparatus, they wanted to provide assistance to that community, and they did so. But they did so at some great liability because there was literally no legal authority for them to be responding into that community under those circumstances. The Conflagration Act has existed for many decades. The State Fire Marshal has operated a system that allows mobilizing fire service resources at the direction of the governor in fire scenarios, but nothing like this in a non-fire situation. Out of that event, and one a year later in Polk County, which was very similar, and also a major fire that occurred in southern Oregon, 2002, I believe, the Biscuit Fire, came discussion with the fire service that the mobilization plan, which is a product of the Conflagration Act, needed to have some provision for these kinds of non-fire responses. So through the Governor's Fire Service Policy Council and the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, this bill comes to you at the request of the governor. I can speak on behalf of the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association that they certainly support this bill statewide. And I would respectfully request your favorable consideration on this bill.
So if I'd put this in the simplest terms, it just makes legal the moving of the resources around to meet the needs. Is that right?
Chair Shields, that is exactly correct.
Okay, are there other questions relative to this bill? If there are no other questions, I'm going to close the hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2155. Somebody want to make a commotion down there? Senator George.
I will. I'm delaying, waiting for a couple of members to get back in here. I would love to move House Bill 2155 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George moves House Bill 2155 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? If there's no discussion, is there any objection? Seeing no objection. So ordered, House Bill 2155 will go to the floor, and I'll carry this one. Okay? And with that, we're going to close our hearing on House Bill 2155. But before I close today's hearing, I do want to remind you that we meet both Thursday and Friday. My goal today was to get you done early. We managed to do 11 bills in an hour and 17 minutes. An hour and 17 minutes for 11 bills. So we'll try to get you out of Corvallis in a decent time on Thursday, but I do want you to remember that we're going to see the tsunami simulator machine down at OSU. Some of us have seen it, some of us haven't. But we may learn a little bit about tsunamis. All of that whole hearing is about emergency preparedness.
How long do you anticipate the meeting lasting?
I wish I knew. We'll move as fast as we can. 9 o'clock. I want you there to be at a van, and we'll be picked up and taken over to the wave machine, and then we'll be brought back, and we're going to start the hearing at 10:30. And we're going to move through those bills as quickly as we can. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll try to get an estimate from Judith as we look through those bills in order. You can look at the agenda yourselves. I'm willing to work right through lunch if you want to do that. We can have lunch brought in and keep on going through lunch, or we can take a lunch break, whichever you folks decide you'd like to do, and we can talk about that on Thursday when we meet again. Is that okay?
That's right. I do have menus, so we can pre-order. I do have, by the way, parking passes for everyone at the downtown fire station, which is the where they have their city hall, which is where our meeting is. So we'll be able to. I'll get these to you, please, and I'll be coming around to find out whether or not you want me to reserve a state car for you to drive down there. But yeah, the goal is to be there and parked and on the van, ready to go to the Wave Lab at 9 o'clock, and we will be starting the hearing.
Is that okay? Other questions? So let's figure out how long we think we'll be there in terms of the length of the meeting and decide whether you want to have lunch right there as we work through the noon hour. Okay? Or whether you want to take a break for lunch. With that, the Committee on General Government is adjourned. Thank you for moving quickly today.